ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our super special guest is David Sherry, the founder of the super famous Death to the Stock Photo. And we're going to talk about building creative communities. This episode is brought to you by Balsamic Mockups. Balsamic Mockups is a low-fidelity wireframing tool. Basically, it's like sketching on a notepad or whiteboard, but at the computer. The idea is to get the structure of your user interface idea down before you start coding or sweating the details in Photoshop. Try it free for 30 days at balsamic.com. Hi, David.
Hey, Jane. How's it going?
Doing great. Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be able to finally chat with you, and I've watched from afar as you have created a ton of good resources for people looking to learn UI, people looking to start a SaaS product. So definitely excited to chat, and just want to say thank you for all the work you've done in helping build your own creative community and helping other people on the internet learn how to build a SaaS product.
Oh, that's wonderful. I just love to hear that. Thank you. It's a great start for the episode with some praise.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. It's cool. I've watched from afar, so it's fun to be able to chat with you. And yeah, definitely just doing awesome work, so it's good to connect.
Awesome. We're going to start with a questionnaire. And question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Sure. So it's funny because I'm from Ohio, and my parents definitely never did anything web related. And so it's always interesting to try to describe this to my family, my extended family. But what I do for a living is essentially I coordinate artists across the globe to create beautiful media, which is stock photography, stock video. And all of that media gets produced every single month and sent out to a big list of people across the globe who are creatives, designers, bloggers. And that media also gets put into a library that people are able to access every month with a premium membership. So I run a company. It's called Death to the Stock Photo. Like I said, I manage these artists to kind of fill our portfolio of stock media. And I also just personally really enjoy writing, talking about technology, talking about community building. So yeah, I'm somebody else on the internet looking to build SaaS platforms and build communities.
Right. How did you get there to this amazing place where you just do what you enjoy?
Yeah, it's definitely been a wild ride. So I've been doing this for about 4 years now. I graduated from Ohio State 4 years ago, and I really had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do my own thing, start a business, but I really just had no concept of what that actually meant. And so through a series of failed projects, a lot of attempts at starting a business, at starting projects, I ended up starting this small email list. So it was just this really tiny idea with my good friend Allie Lehman, who's a photographer and blogger. And we basically just said, you know, we're photographers part-time. We have this hobby. And it was right at the time where the web was becoming very visual. And I'm sure you saw this change as well. As being a designer on the web, everything switched from text to images. And that's when Instagram came out and Tumblr came out and Pinterest. And everything just got very visual. And so what we saw when we started this small project was the web was getting very visual, but there wasn't a great way to get quality media on a consistent basis as somebody who's building websites, as a blogger, as somebody on social media. And so we wanted to help people keep up and have that consistent quality image resource. And so my friend and I, we started taking photos every month and packaging them up into an email, into a story, and just sending them to our friends, sending them to people we knew who were freelancers, designers, bloggers. And so it was a really small start. It was just a monthly email. And after about 6 months, it really started picking up steam. I think, you know, after 6 months of shooting these photos and sending them out to community, maybe there was 15,000 people signed up. And so we said to ourselves, wow, this is like, yeah, this is something a bit more serious than we expected. And That's really what helped us get off the ground, is kind of this foundation of an email community that liked hearing from us every month, that was able to subscribe and get images for their own work to build their own projects with. And it was kind of at that point that we started to take things a little bit more seriously and say, okay, this is a fun project, but maybe there's something here that can be built into something bigger. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it started. It was a really natural progression in the beginning, and it was just a simple email list.
Yeah, this is lesson number one to anybody. Like, an email list is number one MVP for any project. It's super simple, but it empowers you to connect with people.
I totally agree. And I definitely will comment that I think probably for the first maybe 8 months, our landing page was one page. I mean, there wasn't even like an about or anything like that. Like, it was such a clear, simple idea. And I think that's part of starting by email as well, is just like, the simpler the idea is that you start with, I think the easier it is to understand if people resonate with it or not.
Absolutely. Since we're not going to talk about, you know, your business per se, can you give us an idea of your business model? How do you monetize? Do you pay out your authors, your photographers, yourself?
Totally. Yeah, of course. So I've been lucky enough to be doing this full time since 2014. So I've been able to pay myself enough, as well as the other people we work with. The business model is pretty simple. There's a free plan, quote unquote, which is just our email list. And that gets you 10 photos per month if you sign up. And then if you want more, which is double the photos plus some video and some extra stuff, you can go premium for $15 a month, which gets you access to everything we've ever created, organized, downloadable. And so that's how we make money, is people sign up for our premium plan after they have a good experience with the free email list. As far as how we pay our photographers, we actually produce and art direct all of our imagery up front with the photographer. So Every photographer gets paid up front just to produce the set, like you would hire a photographer for any project.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's a little not bit a typical royalty model.
Yeah, definitely a bit different. But what we find is that the artists we work with just have an amazing experience working with our company, because a lot of times they have input on what the idea is for the project. They get paid well for it, so they know, you know, it's not like this chance of, am I going to get royalties for this? Is it going to be 10 cents? You know, how is this going to do? They just know that they get to be paid well to take on a fun project, plus get the exposure just through our community. So, yeah, I've just found it, at least in the time being, that our artists have a really great experience, and many of them are repeat artists with us as well. So we have a lot of photographers that we work with pretty regularly as well.
What does that creative direction look like when, let's say, you're located in Ohio, if you still are, and the person is somewhere in Europe, and you decide to take a photo shoot of Amsterdam? How do you art direct it remotely?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we definitely have produced imagery all over the world, from South Korea, Australia, just really all over. And so we have run into some really interesting but fun experiences with our photographer that we work with in South Korea. There's a language barrier. There's also the time difference, which is pretty extreme, actually. And so,
tell me about that.
I think one thing we do well is, and I know you have some content about this as well, is I think we do a good job giving artists a lot of freedom. And the way you do that is really two things. The first thing is we're very selective about who we work with. And the reason for that is because we want to find somebody who's doing the type of work that we envision being produced. And so we don't really like find people and then ask them to adapt completely into some totally different style. Oftentimes the artists we work with, we love what they're doing and we just want them to produce something similar for us. So I think the first thing in how we work with our artists is we work with them because we love their work, and we don't want them to change. We just want them to make more of that beautiful work that we've already been seeing. And so it's usually a pretty natural project for them. Like, there's a very natural fit for the style that they're after. The second piece past that is we front load a lot of the conversations about what the project is going to be, versus coming in at the end and asking for edits and changes and stuff like that. And so I think by spending a lot of time up front with the artist and just having that discussion about what the overall direction is, what's kind of the inspiration behind it, we can then allow them to really have that freedom and creativity to take on the project, because the reality is we're not there. Like, I can't be in South Korea to look over the project or watch over it. So we put a lot of trust in people. We let them do work that they naturally love to do. We want to make sure that they're excited about the project and that it's a good fit for their skill set and style. And after a lot of those discussions, we honestly just back off and let them create. And I think that's been something that's been very beneficial for us in every aspect of the business, not just the photography. But I think just to work with artists today, you want to, you know, be selective, find somebody who fits with what you're looking for, plan with them up front, and then let them do their thing, get out of their way.
That's a great tip. Going back to you personally, what does your typical day look like?
Sure. So I've gotten a lot more structured over the years. I think, you know, when you first start out, you think that there's maybe this inspiration thing that's going to hit. Maybe you're just trying to work like crazy all the time. I'd say I've moved sort of away from that, and I've become much more of a structured sort of worker. I guess I'm trying to be just a professional about the craft. And so for me, my typical day in terms of how it's structured is I really try to, before noon, have just some creative time to myself where I'm pushing the business forward and not just in the day-to-day. And then the second half of the day is for supporting the team and kind of fulfilling the general duties of the business. So that's kind of how the work is structured. I split it in half. I try to just avoid communication mostly in the first half of the day. And then as far as what I'm doing day to day, I started out by being one of the photographers myself, as well as Ali being one of the photographers. And now I'm doing a lot more of the communication, the community building, the kind of email behind the scenes type stuff. So I'm less sort of involved in the day to day of the projects, more working on pushing the business forward by connecting with people, by figuring out ways to help build our community, and just grow more value for our audience. I think that's most of my valuable time is how can I add more value to the people we're already serving.
That's great. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
That's a good question. What I enjoy the most is I think the purpose, I suppose, behind Death to Stock and even the brand and what it's really about is I really enjoy helping people carve out their own path. I think that everybody, whether it's a side hustle, a project, an art piece, a new business, I think we all have this desire to create something and infuse our personality into it and put it out there in the world and help other people and just express ourselves. And so what I really enjoy most is creating things that help other people do that. Like, I love helping encourage people, give them inspiration, give them resources, teach, lead. And so anytime I can help other people on their journey in starting out and carving out their own path, that's what is a blast for me. So, you know, something like this podcast is a good example, something like connecting with one of our community members or a customer to try to help them on their way, or just honestly creating something I know is going to connect and resonate and help encourage somebody who's in that phase of trying to build their own path. So that's why I love community building. That's what I love to do. I think that manifests in a lot of different ways. As far as the work I don't like doing, that's a great question. So much of the stuff that I quote unquote don't like is still learning for me right now. And so I'm trying to adopt this mentality that even if it's budgeting or legal work or, you know, anything like that, it's still an opportunity for me to learn, and I love to learn. So I'd say there's definitely some items that are less fun for me, like kind of getting caught up on email and stuff, maybe is it, because it doesn't feel like learning. But anywhere I can see a learning opportunity, it's going to at least be, you know, somewhat beneficial and fun for me, I suppose. So maybe getting caught up on email. I think as much as email is amazing, I think sometimes getting caught up on an inbox that's full is probably my least favorite activity.
That's right. What is your next big thing?
That's a good question. So many ideas all the time. It's hard to select the one thing and make that decision because, you know, you want to kind of go all out. The thing I'm excited about next is I've been putting together my own podcast, which is just me talking about what it's actually like day to day building a company and building community. It's called The First 4 Years. And I find that a lot of resources and, you know, books and stuff like that are about people at the top. So we read these books about Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg. The problem is, if you are just starting your journey, it's very difficult to look at those people at the top of their field and understand what the right next step is for you where you are today. And so I'm excited about diving further into what the day-to-day actually looks like for people starting out and gaining momentum with their business. So I'd say what I'm excited about is definitely that podcast and other media related to that theme and that goal.
Wonderful. I totally agree with you. Those success stories are, they're amazing for inspiration, but they're not super practical, really.
Mm-hmm. And everything is changing so quickly. I mean, you know, every month, every 6 months, there is a new landscape that is shaping kind of before our eyes. And so I even think just from a lifestyle standpoint, and it's interesting, even the questions you're asking about, you know, what does your day look like? It's so hard to understand what, like, I'm curious, like, what's your day like? What's like all these other people's day like? Like, are these influencer people, are they making money? Are they, you know, are they actually traveling all the time? Or are they just posting stuff from previous trips? Like, I am very curious, you know, I think, yeah. And I think we all sort of, if you work for yourself, and, you know, we were talking earlier about working from home before the recording, and it's just like, you don't know if you're doing it right. Like, you're like, I'm here and I'm home working and nobody's telling me what to do. And I think this is what I should be doing all day. But it's like, yeah, I think that topic's really interesting. And I want to be transparent myself about, you know, some of the stress and what it took to get here, but also transparent about just what the day-to-day work looks like now. I think we all have huge opportunities, but it's uncharted territories for everybody. So I think it's a good thing for us to talk about.
Exactly. I think I kind of embrace that model already, that it really, there is no right way, and yeah, it can be perfect. And also another big one, you can really have seasons of productivity and seasons of non-productivity, which you kind of have to embrace.
Totally. And it's hard not to freak out when you're in the system of, or the season of non-productivity, and you think, man, is everybody else like doing it 24/7? And yeah, it's definitely difficult to interpret what really goes on behind the scenes when you see it just through social media or whatever. And I think even just the lifestyle aspect, you know, I know you mentioned that you have two kids, and it's like, there's just realities of our day to day of, you know, keeping up with friends and family. And when you work for yourself, it's kind of all infused together. And yeah, I'm definitely just curious about how people balance it all and how they make it work for them, whatever that means, you know.
That's why I'm asking it, mm-hmm. this question.
Yeah, yeah.
That's totally why I'm asking my guests, right? So let's go to the main topic, community building. And before we kind of go into technicalities, what is a community for you? Because it does not, from our conversation, I see that an email list is a community, even though the conversation is strictly one way and it's a broadcast. But totally, it's still a community. So what is a community for you?
Yeah, I think a community is, no, and that's a great point, because it's definitely mostly one directional from our standpoint. I think a community is a group of people who are after sort of a, I suppose, a common goal or a common outlook. And so I think people who identify with our brand or with any brand, like a fashion brand, it's people who see, I kind of want to say magic a little bit, but it's more of like a lifestyle or outlook or perspective that feels kind of magical. And a community is just a group of people who identify with that magic, and they sort of want to adopt some of that themselves. And so they align themselves with a brand, with a leader, with others in the community, so they can all kind of collectively get in on this change or this magic that they're sort of after. So yeah, I think a community to me is just any group that's identified an aspiration and is sort of aligned with something that helps them get to that aspiration.
In your world, is it paid or not?
You're saying for a community?
Yeah, because I see building communities, Slack groups, forums as a closed paid one is a large part of a business model for many people I know.
I would say it's, I mean, I think you definitely can do paid communities, but I don't think that it's the payment that binds people together. And so in my mind, a community does not need to be paid or unpaid. I think it's actually a lot of the elements that have nothing to do even with directly just the product itself that sort of creates the fabric of a community. So for us, it's free. It's definitely more one-directional. I see ourselves as sort of the leader who is simply communicating ideals to a large audience that is mostly free. You know, by far, our community is much, much larger as a free audience. And so, yeah, I think... I think there's many things that bind together a community, and payment can help help bring a community closer together from that buy-in, but it's not necessary.
That's a great question. Actually, when you started to talk about mailing list as a community, something you know, something turned inside me because last year I had an experiment here at UI Breakfast, which I consider failed. I wanted to... There it goes, quote unquote. Wanted to build a community here, which meant I was going to do a forum or a Slack group or something like that, not paid for people who are on my list. And then you mentioned that it's not really a necessary component for those people to interact with each other. It's just that they know they belong here. It's good enough.
Sure. And I think if you can get people to interact, for sure, you've built a stronger community. But I think let's look at the example even of, let's say, a movie that everybody loves, like a cult classic movie. For some reason, the only one that comes to mind right now is like Grease or something like that. but some classic movie that everybody loves. Now, if you love that movie where you are, and I love that movie, and there's other people who love that movie and identify with, you know, sort of the memes of that movie, the certain scenes and stuff like that, we're all sort of in this community together in that we aspire and love sort of the themes from that movie. Now, if we can all get together and have a conference about it, I think that's even better. But I wouldn't say it's absolutely necessary for them to interact. The movie and the customer or the follower, I suppose, interact in just the viewing and kind of that relationship, I suppose. So I think if you can bring people together because of those common ideals, it's stronger. But there's just some natural interest and passion and love does unify people even if they're not connected yet.
Great point, great point. So if we talk about communities, what kind of technology can we imagine? I'm just gonna, because I want to make this episode actionable to people who want to build their own, maybe. So tool number one we can see here is a mailing list. Let's say MailChimp and such. What other tools can you think of?
Yeah, so I think there is an amazing opportunity that is still not being taken on by many people, which is the ability to really understand your customer and really reach out to them in honestly like a unique and specific way, sort of individually. And so let's look at a community that has 100 people, because I think when you look at bigger scale, it actually kind of hurts the way you think about the community. And so I think when I'm thinking about the tools right now that help me build a community or create community, I think part of it is being able to have specificity with as much as possible with all the individuals in the community. Because at the end of the day, everybody in a community is an individual. And so, you know, Slack and MailChimp and these forums definitely assist in gathering people to the right place. But I think all the tools that are going to be impactful over the next 10 years are the tools that help drive specificity. And so I can give you
a few. That's interesting. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I can give you a few kind of examples of this. But one kind of high-level example is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Nomad List, which
not
is...
Not that much.
Yeah, so essentially Nomad List is this giant community of people who are, you know, tech type people who travel the globe and work as nomads. And I think part of the key, and this is going to kind of help get into my point about specificity, but part of the key of NomadList is that it's a giant community tied together by one ideal, which is that you can live and work remotely wherever you'd like. But what they do really well is they specify every community in a micro way in really specific locations. So they're all tied together by this giant aspirational goal of, I want to work remotely and I want to work wherever I'd like in the globe. But then the community gets further sort of dissected into, I want to work anywhere in the globe, but I'm specifically in this region, or I'm specifically in Taipei. And so I think what we're seeing happen with communities is it's less like monolithic in terms of everybody just being unified or attached to this one idea. I think it's getting really dissected down into, I'm somebody on NomadList, but I'm also specifically in Taipei or in Los Angeles, or even more granular than that. And so as somebody who builds a community or is looking for tools to build a community, I'm looking for ways to personalize and get more specific with as many people as I can in as many ways as I can. And so one kind of example, or one thing that we're starting to do a bit more at Death the Stock, is we use a tool called Intercom. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yes, I'm using it a lot.
Okay, so yeah, and if you've used Intercom before, you know that you can actually sift through your customers or your subscribers in a really granular way. So it's like, I want to see everybody who's been around for over 6 months, who lives in LA, who's female, who, you know, you can just really divvy it up. And then what you can do is, because you've gotten really specific, you can create things for that really specific, small, individualized group. And I think those are the meaningful interactions that you can have now, versus just kind of blasting one thing to everybody. And so, yeah, I guess the short of sort of this answer is, anytime I can learn just honestly real, relevant, interesting, human ideas about somebody who's in my community, my tribe, my network, then what I can do is say, how can I help that one person? How can I help those five people who fit that small, specific demographic? And then honestly, I just make stuff for them. And when you get that specific, I think people are just blown away that you took the time to do that. So I can provide some more examples, because I know this is kind of a detailed answer. One example is, we created a survey recently for our email list. And when the survey went out, depending on what answers you chose in that survey, we had already prepared like many different automated email responses based on how you filled out the survey. And so one of the questions was just like, how are you doing today? And it was just kind of a fun question we threw in. But if you picked, I feel like I want to cry as your answer, everybody who picked that got a specific email that was kind of a joke, and it was the Death the Stock Guide to Crying Effectively. And it was just like this fun PDF, and who knows how many people clicked it, right? Like maybe only 5 or 50 people clicked that, but they all got something that was very targeted and specific to them. If they had picked something else in the survey and a different question, they would have gotten a different response sent to them. And so what we're trying to do now that I think is really fascinating and honestly makes me feel good as a community builder, community leader, is how can I like really tailor and think and connect humanly on a more individual basis as much as possible. And so if you, Jane Portman, are signed up for Death the Stock, how can I send something specifically to you that really resonates? You know, hey, Jane, I know you do UI podcasts because I've always checked on your site a little bit because I know you're a customer of ours. I thought it'd be really cool if you checked out this site because I think it might help you with recording, blah, blah, blah. And when you have those personal interactions one by one, you know, five by five with really meaningful content, I think it makes a world of difference than thinking about how can I blast something out to everybody. So I will wrap that up by just saying I'm really interested in very individualized, meaningful connection points with small, small segments of my audience. That to me is where all the tools are going, and I think that's where the biggest opportunity is.
Well, that's a pretty big trend now, I should say. There's Brendan Dunn these days. He's building a special piece of software which customizes the website experience according to email list data. I know it's not that nonprofit, because what they have in mind is a perfect conversion rates for and tailored to a specific person, but and the call to actions tailored to a specific person, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's totally the way to do it. I think it's fascinating.
And they have they're developing software that's gonna do that for people without, you know, much code or something, which is cool. But I have a couple concerns here. One is, how do you do that without spreading yourself too thin in content production if you're just a single founder, not like a media team? The second one, where is that balance between a personal message and an autoresponder? Like,
totally. Both great questions. So the first one is, I think you have to ask yourself, and this is the answer that I've come to for me. I'm not saying that's right for other people, but you have to ask yourself, what's the meaningful work that I can do that builds trust, connection, and really grows my network or the value that I provide? And what I've sort of found is, when you're asking yourself, should I be doing these individualized reach outs versus maybe larger kind of pushes for your marketing, I've sort of just decided that while both are necessary, I need to still have that personal outreach and interaction. And in some ways, it's almost more important than some of the things that I thought were important. So like one example is, let's say you've got a company, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and you're doing an okay job on all of them. I think it's smart to ask yourself, and I'm not saying this is the right answer, is it better for me to spend a few more hours per week on Twitter, or is it better for me to email individually 6 customers every day, or whatever that is? And so in my mind, I think the value is actually greater on the personal reach out or on spending the time to make something meaningful with a smaller group. Other people might feel the opposite and think that it's better to spend the time, you know, with social media or more kind of like blast type marketing campaigns. So I'd say just ask yourself that question, and you can weigh out the pros and cons. But for me, the important, meaningful work is the personal reach out, and that actually drives things forwards more than the larger items that I think are more intensive. The second question, which was about autoresponders. I think that one element of that is how you write. And I think if you're clear that it is an autoresponder, but you still make it engaging and fun, then I think people don't mind. I think if it's very specialized, like the thing about the crying, where it's like that, you know, 100 people click this one thing and they clearly got something that was still customized to them, I think that they don't mind, because they know that it was maybe triggered, but it's still sort of delightful. But I will say that spontaneous interactions, I think, typically have more value. And I find, and it's kind of always funny to me, but when I reach out to people in our community, people are always like blown away. They're like, I can't believe you emailed me. And it, to me, it's just funny, because it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy of a thing to do. And it shows you how little it happens. And so I think if you can be spontaneous and real and, you know, look at a customer of yours a day, check out their site, send them some feedback on something, send them some ideas for maybe how they could better their business or something like that, and just take that time, even if it's one customer a day. Personally, I believe that has more value than trying to increase a follower count or something like that on social media.
That's right. I just got an email today saying, well, I do have email courses going out and all these set up. And I got a response saying, oh, I don't know if you're a person or a bot, or you might be a very good bot.
yeah.
I said I'm probably a very good bot.
Oh, nice.
Here's my response.
Yeah, you can have some fun with people with that too, you know. And you can be transparent and say, hey, this is our robot friend sending this message, or hey, I promise this is actually me. I'm looking at doing, I think this is another tool, I guess, going back to the previous question, which is, I'm looking at doing video messages for customers. So I kind of just want to start like recording myself on video, just helping them with the customer support query, or just encouraging them or welcoming them. And those would actually be individualized. So I would try to just send those one by one. That knows it's for sure not a bot. But I'm sure as the bots and chatbots and stuff begin taking over more, it might become a little bit more unclear who's a person or not. But I think just going forward, look at ways to just connect personally and humanly with people. You know, I think I love that interaction you just mentioned. Like, it's fun just to joke with a customer and be like, am I a robot? I don't know. Like, message me back and we'll see, you know? Like, you can, I don't know. I think we can all be a little bit more human and kind of connected instead of formal. So, granted, I'm not selling, like, you know, ultra expensive software or something like that. So maybe you have to be a little bit more formal when somebody's paying you, whatever, $2,000 a month for something or whatever.
One thing I'd like to mention, one thing that's very important for me, I know other people like to kind of blur lines, but I never make my stuff pretend that that's me personally. All my, you know, newsletters and autoresponders, they're typeset in a different type. They have all these big unsubscribe links and headers and everything. So they know it's an automated message. It's just written in a very personal tone. So I guess you can easily combine both. It can be super personal, but doesn't pretend that it's sent from my iPhone. Oh, you know, those shady tactics.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's actually a cool opportunity to, like, just, and it's exactly what you're saying. Instead of, like, hiding something, or, like, people do this frequently too, which is maybe you'll pretend your business is bigger than it is. Like, our team will get back to you in 3 days, you know, but it's just you or something. I think the opportunity is actually to do the opposite, which is, like, just being really real and transparent and just, you know, saying, you know, hey, I'm actually, like, I think this is me personally, and hopefully these are the customers and community that I interact with, but it's like, hey, the reason I got back to that last query a day late was because it was actually a family holiday and I was away, and so I'm so sorry I couldn't get back to that, but, like, I just finished my vacation. This is a team of one. Like, I think when you're just really straightforward and transparent with people, usually people totally resonate with that, because they're people too, and they are also going on vacation and they have family things come up. And so I think the opportunity is to be just really straightforward and honest, and I think people appreciate it.
I'm so happy that at least in my SaaS business, Tiny Reminder, I do have my developer on board so that I can truly not lie and say we in the communications, because otherwise it would be really not honest.
and if you humanize yourself, people sort of typically have to treat you more like a human. You're like, hey, my developer so-and-so, he's got his hands full with something right now, but he'll get back to you. I think there's just an opportunity to sort of humanize yourself by being honest and transparent, and then it helps people treat you better, because I think a lot of the, not to get on the topic of, like, internet trolls and stuff like that, but a lot of that comes from anonymity. And so when you go the opposite direction, I think people generally are more receptive and friendly, and they want to connect with you. We all want to work with people we like. We all want to buy from people we like. And if you're just yourself, I think people tend to resonate well with that.
It's interesting where our conversation has gone, because I did have some questions on my, sketched up for you. And those questions they just don't make sense right now. So they were the chicken and the egg problem when you're starting out, like, a forum or a Slack channel or something. There is a daily maintenance for the same things when you have to come in daily and kind of groom and respond, et cetera, and spend your time there. The technology that you use and how you monetize that. But, you know, you managed to steer off the conversation in a totally nonprofit way.
Well, I think the tactics, I mean, it's always helpful to understand the tactics that people are taking. But I think the harder thing to shift is your philosophy and approach, because that's more of a mindset. And so I think it's always good to kind of discuss, you know, both are good to discuss, but if you can change the approach that somebody takes and the almost the culture of how they look at something, or the culture of a team and how they look at something, then you can continue to refine and use these different tools and tactics. But we all have the same tools, yet some people are more effective with them than others. And so why is that? It's because they see them differently. They see the tool and they say, that's a tool that's going to let me, you know, reach out individually to people. Whereas somebody else says, Twitter is a place where I can just blast my PR all the time, and it's not as effective.
Exactly. Is there much difference between a community and a grateful audience? Because there is so much advice for audience building, which is, you know, start your list, et cetera, et cetera. What's the difference between a community and an audience?
That's a great question. This is a little different than what I said earlier, I suppose, but I think typically a community is more connected in some way. I guess maybe the difference is just your sort of philosophy. Like, do you want to build an audience, which is people who just sort of follow you, or do you want to lead a demographic of people to a place that you're either trying to get to yourself or you want to share about? So I guess maybe they're similar. It's just a perspective difference. And I prefer to be on this journey and then share what I'm learning about my journey to the people who are also trying to get to the place that I'm in now or the place I'm trying to get in the future. And so that's, I guess, how I see it as a community, because we're all in this thing sort of together versus an audience, which is like, I just hope people follow this thing and just listen, I suppose. I want them to change and make progress themselves too. That's why it's maybe a community in my mind instead of an audience.
There is a guy who works with Amy Hoy. His name is Alex Hillman. He's totally charming and awesome. And he is the founder of a great co-working space in Philadelphia. And why I'm saying that is because he has a great audiobook, or maybe it's turned into a book now. I totally don't remember its name, but I'm going to link to it in the show notes. And it's about building a co-working space. And it has all these right things that you are saying, just more that the space and the technology, they don't matter because it's all about the people that you get together and the approach that you advocate. And it's a really, really hard thing to do. Way harder than just to organize a technical way for them to meet.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's difficult. I mean, I think people have a lot of different things that are vying for their attention. And it's definitely difficult to gather people. But I think the easiest way to understand that everybody can build a community is knowing that the place you're in now, whoever you are, the place you're in now, somebody else would like to get to the place that you're in. They're either younger, they have less experience, they've never jumped into the field that you're in. And so when you know that there's likely somebody out there who sees where you are and wants to get there, no matter how early or far along you are, that's when you understand that there's an opportunity to build a community. And so I think the thing to know is just everybody in your community is watching you and your lead, if you're leading that community, because they're trying to get to that similar place that you're in now and that you're trying to head to. So I think everybody can build a community, and I think we're seeing way more people than in previous generations stand up and lead communities. And it's really that realization.
That's fantastic. As we are wrapping up today's episode, if you were to give, you know, a few steps for a person who just starting out, who has zero followers anywhere, what would they do to start building a community around themselves?
Sure. So I think kind of going back to what I was saying, look at where you are now and see it as a great place to be, because somebody else out there wants to be where you are, almost no matter what position you're in. And then think about how you got to that place, what you learned, what were the pitfalls. And if you're excited about helping other people navigate those, like there's a guy named Chris McAllister, actually, who's been a business coach of mine. And he told me this, and I think this is so true. He said, you give where it hurts, meaning the place we're able to give from is the place that we had pain in ourselves. And so if it's stress, if it's like, you know, I dropped out of college to start this thing, and like, I just wish somebody else had been there guiding me because I had to figure it all myself. I had to figure it out all myself. Figure out, you know, what pain point you sort of had in the past and then overcame, and then look at the steps you took, analyze that. And that's the starting place for figuring out kind of the value you can provide and the community you can build would be. And so I think you'll have a ton of ideas when you look back and say, oh man, I realize now that if only somebody had helped me with that decision, or like helped me understand this, I would have avoided that pitfall. So let me help other people avoid that pitfall. And then I think the second point is and this is actually how Death to Stock started too. You have a community already. You've got contacts, you've got friends, and I think people often are scared to notify their closest allies that they're doing something new. And so like you're writing a book and it's like you don't want to tell anybody in your immediate network, when actually those are all your biggest advocates, all your biggest assistants. And so I think, you know, start by analyzing where you're at now, what the struggle was to get where you're at now, and how you could help other people avoid that. And then look at your immediate network and just email them or just reach out and just notify them about what you're doing. And often if you do that, they connect you to other people who could be a good fit. Yeah, I think just making it a little bit more known, like, hey, I'm doing this new thing. I just wanted to let you know. And that's a good way to start seeding kind of the kernel of that community.
That's a great piece of advice indeed. So, David, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so you can find me on, you can go to the website, deathtothestockphoto.com, deathtothestock.com. You can sign up for our email list and hear from us every month if you'd like to. I think it's a really fun place to get inspired and get great resources. You can also go to my personal blog, which is davidjsherry.com, and then I'm at Brandswell on Instagram and Twitter, which is Brandswell. Which is my old freelancing alter ego. So, and you know, send me an email if anybody has any questions, if you guys want to connect. It's david@deathtothestockphoto.com. Would love to hear from you. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for making the time for us today. And this is a great piece of advice. It turned out like it's a totally different direction than what I thought it's going to be, but it's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks so much for having me on. And again, excited about the work you're doing and glad we got to connect.
Have a wonderful day, David. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.